listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are indeed, and it is a gloomy Paul.
It's a gloomy day.
November 29th.
But you are just so friggin' effervescent, you make up for
what?
It. You know that? You are. You're effervescent.
It's
you're
just a...
You're just an energy. You have your own gravitational pull.
Really?
Did you know that?
And which way is that pulling?
That's another show. It's another show. How are you?
I'm good, thank
good,
you.
Good, good.
Happy to be here.
As am I.
We
as
have
am
a
I.
Wonderful show.
Always.
Today.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
two
we'd
great
like to
guests.
Thank our sponsor, of course, Paul.
Yes.
Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Express, ladies and gentlemen, you visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And as always, Paul, we've got a big show this week, and it's kind of a boys' club today, if you will.
Yes, really?
Yeah, three
okay.
very diverse talents.
It's a good thing I have this picture, then.
Yes.
Yes, but we'll talk about that picture later. Yes.
They are three very diverse talents in Los Angeles theater, two of them with us in studio here, and one who we will be introducing to our listeners via telephone in just a few minutes. The first of our in-studio guests comes with a pedigree that includes a Bachelor of Arts degree in drama from Yale University. Yale,
yeah.
Right? It's like one of the best.
No
right?
dummy.
And a Master of Fine Arts in Acting from the American Conservatory Theater. Add to that multiple Golden Globe nominations for his work in film and television, and a little citation that People magazine issues every year, the sexiest man alive. Harry Hamlin is here.
That's quite an entrance.
Did you like that?
Oh, that was good.
Good,
no,
good.
It was all good.
Yeah.
Good.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for being
it's
here.
It's my pleasure to be here amid all of the effervescence in the studio today.
Don't get any on you.
What?
Don't get any on you.
Right to the cleaners.
Yes.
Yeah, I wore my special suit.
Also in studio today, he's a man of many musical talents, heard around the world from touring with the great Liza Minnelli to his own sold-out concerts across the country. As we like here at State of the Arts like to call him, he is the other sexiest man alive. From Broadway, nightclubs, and records, Cortez Alexander is with us.
Yeah!
Sorry, Cortez, I only had one song.
That's okay, thank you.
Only had the one song. Is that applause okay?
It's perfect.
Okay. Yeah, it was nice of you to bring them with you, by the way. It was very kind.
For a small room.
And yes.
Listen, before we introduce our guest who's waiting patiently on the telephone.
Yes.
How was your week? I haven't seen you because we took Thanksgiving off. So first of all, how was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was good. I drove up to San Francisco.
Yeah.
My friend Randy and his wife Karen live up there. And Monica and I drove up with the new convertible that we bought.
Yeah.
And the friggin' roof broke 2 days before, so we couldn't put the top down for the whole drive up. Which
is what you were looking forward
to. Yes and no, because we were doing the short way up the 5. And if you put the top down on that drive up the 5, you basically get dust and you smell cows for most of it.
So we probably
wouldn't have had the top down much anyway. But it was a great holiday.
Maybe somebody was looking out for you there.
Yeah, no, it was a great holiday. They have a beautiful place up there and found an incredible little shop called the Fatted Calf, which is like a charcuterie type of place with meats and cheeses. And, of course, being of Italian descent, I'm all over that.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. So hopefully we'll send them a link and I'll get a prosciutto in the mail or something.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Paid with ham.
I had a nice Thanksgiving. It was kind of Thanksgiving hopping, if you will.
Yeah.
Two spectacular events that were held.
Performance events?
No, by friends. Well, they were performances involved with other things.
Well, they were performances once you got there. Once you got there, they became performances.
Well, let's not go there. But no. Very nice meals with very good friends. And I saw some fabulous theater, of course, in the past 2 weeks. Mr. Hamlin's play that's currently on stage at the NoHo Arts Center was one of those wonderful evenings on November 16th, preceded by the amazing Raul Esparza from Broadway.
Yes, at the Valley Performing Arts Center.
Of course, Raul was on our show a couple of weeks ago to promote that. So, and really, have you ever seen him?
Sure.
Yes, unbelievable, this man. And one of the nicest men, too. I had a nice visit with him.
He was very
backstage.
Nice on the phone.
Sandaland Diaries. with Paolo and Dino?
Yes.
Yes, at the Stella Adler.
Yeah, yep. The Blank Theater.
Well, it's the Blank Theater. At the Blank. At the Stella.
At the Stella Adler, yes, yes.
Which was fantastic. And last night to the opening of Anything Goes.
Man, you're unstoppable.
With the amazing Rachel York and also Eric Bergen.
My gosh.
Our friend Eric Bergen.
Yes.
Was co-starring in the show. What a beautiful production.
That's like five plays in 4 days.
Well, it was 2 weeks, over 2 weeks, yeah. But we need to move on to our,
no, sounds like you're busy.
Our very special guest.
All right, yeah, why don't you give him the intro he is due, and I'll fiddle with our electronics here and see if I can get him on the line.
All right, wonderful. Formerly, speaking of the Stella Adler, formerly artistic director for the distinguished Stella Adler Theater in Hollywood, our first guest is a passionate writer of theater and television, and also directs theater. He developed the hit play Wishful Drinking with Carrie Fisher and directed its world premiere production at the Geffen Playhouse in Los Angeles. Wishful Drinking went on to tour the country, ending with a successful run at Studio 54 on Broadway. He then received a commission from the Geffen Playhouse here in Los Angeles to co-write and direct Step in Time, a musical memoir with stage and screen icon Dick Van Dyke, which debuted at the Geffen Playhouse starring Mr. Van Dyke himself. His latest work, One November Yankee, is on stage now at the NoHo Arts Center in North Hollywood and not only stars the sexiest man alive, but Hot Lips Houlihan, a.k.a. the lovely and talented Loretta Swit from TV's iconic hit series, MASH. Please welcome the third sexiest man alive, writer-director Joshua Ravitch.
Hello, Josh. Are you with us?
More effervescent.
How are you? Thank you so much for taking the time to call in today. We appreciate having you on the show. My name is Paul, and Michael gave you that lovely introduction. And we appreciate having you on. I want to jump right into it since we have three guests today, if that's okay with you, Josh. The title of the show, I love titles that sort of ask a question and are provocative and you don't really know what they're about. Could you sort of describe how you, I mean, it's simple how you arrived at it, but it's pretty interesting, too. What One November Yankee stands for?
One November Yankee is actually the tail number of our airplane, which is featured in the play. We have a full-scale, single-engine airplane crashed on stage. When I was looking for a title, I went through the aviation alphabet, which is sort of Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, Foxtrot. I have a pilot's license, so it was in my back pocket. I was looking for something that was poetic and something that was provocative, and the play, part of the play takes place in November, and it's about the winter of people's lives, and it was a sense of the East Coast and the Yankee of it all, and it just seemed to not be right on the nose, but have something poetic to say about the play and come from an unexpected place.
Oh, that's wonderful. It was intriguing to me how people arrive at that, you know, because it's the most important thing, really, is what you call your play.
And of course, and the title alone comes to life the moment you enter the theater, because it is the set piece. What you see, Paul, on the
I saw program. The artwork, and yeah. I love graphic design, and it's very arresting.
It's a spectacular set piece, actually, that is an amazing focal point in what they do. The set designer for this show really knew what he was doing and how to manipulate subtly, you know, various things.
Yeah, that was Dana Moran Williams, and we actually spent a day out at Santa Paula Airport looking at a real Piper Cub, and the guys photographed every inch of it and measured it and looked at me and said, we will put a plane on stage that will look like the real deal, and they really achieved it.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And from a directional standpoint, Josh, I was there opening night, as you know, and, well, you really kept it moving. You kept the two characters, because it is just a two-character show with Harry and Loretta, so interestingly in and out of the area in and around that plane, and because of the way that it's written and directed and how it all cohesively comes together, it's just fascinating. It was riveting to me, and of course the three different stories that all have a parallel meaning to them.
Well, and during rehearsal, Harry would constantly say, because we taped out a floor in a rehearsal hall, and he kept looking at this place where the plane was going to be and sort of tried to imagine this gigantic set piece in the middle of our play.
And it is gigantic. Emphasis. All the way up to the top of the theater.
I'm curious about something, Josh, and I'm going to ask Harry about it as well when we chat with him shortly. But I'm always curious in the assembly of creating a play, the idea of having the two people play different pairs of siblings, and the story, the primary story of the plane crash. Did you know from the word go you were going to sort of marry those two elements, or is that something that evolved in the writing of it?
I knew pretty quickly. I thought for a minute about having six characters do the play, but this play is really at its core about brothers and sisters and about the universal experience that we all have with siblings. And I thought that it would be imaginative and interesting for an audience if the same two people played three different versions of that relationship in a sort of subtle and maybe not so subtle way of expressing the idea that this is really about we're all the same. We're all in this together. We're all sort of struggling with this relationship and our parents and finding our lives and comparing ourselves to siblings. So it seemed poetically to be a really appropriate way to actually construct the play. And it also seemed original to me. Instead of, you know, having an audience have three separate one-act plays, it seemed like it would tie the entire play together.
Well, and it's also a whole nother layer of enjoyable theatricality, because you not only have the story and you not only have the performances, but you get to see actors really stretching their theatrical muscles by having to play three characters in one show.
Yeah, and in point of fact, there was a day we were rehearsing and I wanted to work on one scene, and I almost turned to Harry and said, okay, we don't need you today because I'm working on the other guy.
Well, oh,
and
wow.
Then realized, oh wait, he's playing both these guys.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
I don't think he knows that.
Oh, no. Did you know
he
that,
He is
Harry?
Looking in bewilderment here.
I did not know that, Josh. No, I did not. You didn't recognize me?
Is that what it was? I was going to tell Ralph that he could go home and we would just work on scene two and we didn't need you. And then I realized, well, wait a minute, you've actually created this character so completely differently in scene two that in my head for a moment I thought I had two different actors.
I could have used the day off.
Well, when you have two actors play all the parts, you certainly demand a lot of memorization on the part of those two actors.
Oh, yeah.
Which I must say, since you bring that up, actually, I was sitting there thinking of what I produce here in Los Angeles is music and the music of Broadway and the Great American Songbook. And I am always in awe of anyone that comes in and brings in a show that is an hour 15 minutes of singing, you know, and performing music. It's just amazing. And it's also something that is thrilling for me personally. But when I was sitting there watching your play, Josh, and really realizing that Harry and Loretta, the amount of dialogue that it's in that span of 2 hours, you know, of course, with an intermission in between that, but it's extraordinary. It's an extraordinary workout physically and mentally and especially with the three shifts into the different, the characters to go through. My goodness. I mean, it's a huge commitment.
And Michael, what's more extraordinary about that is that Harry got the play really 3.5 weeks before we opened.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, we could have used another week.
You know, that's the famous Harold Kerman line. When Harold was interviewed by the New York Times and asked how long it takes to direct a play, he says it's always the same amount of time, no matter what the play is. It's always one more week.
Yeah, we can always use another week.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly a riveting evening of theater and emotional and sentimental. It takes you on a lot of different rides.
Well, I'm going to tell people how they can see it.
Yes, please do, because they should see it.
This is One November Yankee, and this is playing at the NoHo Arts Center. That's 11-111-36 Magnolia Boulevard at Lancashire, in that beautiful NoHo Arts District there in North Hollywood. Performances are Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3. Tickets are just $30.
That's it.
A deal. Tickets are $30 for all performances. For tickets, please call 818-508-7101. That's 818-508-7101. Or visit www.nohoartscenter.com. And we'll throw that information out there again a couple times before the end of the hour. But we have to say goodbye to Joshua now to talk to our next guest. But Joshua, thank you so much for calling in and being part of our show today. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much.
You're so welcome. I'll talk to you soon, Josh.
We'll chat soon.
Bye-bye.
Nice guy.
Very nice.
Harry, is he really nice or just good? Is he good faker on the phone?
Josh is a very, very nice guy. Very talented. You know, he's also an executive at DreamWorks. So he's moonlighting doing this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I it's funny how I got this play. Agents don't like you to do theater to begin with, and at least the agents in Hollywood. And they don't like you to do free theater, which is what this is. And so I did get a call from my agent a few weeks ago, and she said, you know, got a, this offer, and then there's this play that they sent us, and you're probably not going to be too interested in it. And I said, well, you know, I like doing plays, so send it along, and I'll take a look at it. And she sent the play, but with no information about who was doing it, where it was being done, when it was being done. She just sent the play, and I read it, and it was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I mean, within seconds, I said, I got to find out who's doing this and where. But there was no way for me to find out. I called my agent. They didn't call me back. I couldn't get any info on it at all, and I had to go online. I had to go to LinkedIn. Well, I typed in the author's name, Josh Ravitch, because his name was on the title of the play. And a few minutes later, I was able to reach him on LinkedIn. Only way I could get to this guy, because my agents weren't going to put me together with him. They didn't want me to do it. And we met on LinkedIn. That's the only way I got to do this show. It's kind of a strange Hollywood story, but I was so enthralled with the play that I had to find this man.
Well, how good of you to follow through, you know, based on your response to the piece, and to go get online and actually find the play.
So many business things through social media have helped me.
Yeah.
But
I just want to know, did Josh know that you were trying to reach him because of your interest in the show?
Well, I sent a little, you know, I don't use LinkedIn much, but, you know, you can write in a few characters, and I just said, are you the person who wrote One November Yankee? ? And then I sent it out, and about an hour later, I got back, yes, who are you? And I said, I'm Harry Hamlin. I read the play, and I want to do it. And it kind of evolved that way. It evolved very quickly from that moment on. But had I not used the internet and LinkedIn, there's a good chance I wouldn't have done the play.
Now, what Josh said on the phone, the idea of, obviously your schedule is crazy, so I can understand why you only had the script for 3.5 weeks or so. But that's happened to me a couple of times, where I get things 11th hour. Do you find that sort of focuses you and fuels you when the wolf is at the door time-wise like that, or is it a detriment to what you're doing?
I mean, no, absolutely. No. You know, people take a lot of time sometimes to rehearse plays, and I like to get things done quickly, and I also like a challenge. And okay. So when somebody comes to me and says, you've got a week and a half to learn Hamlet, I go, okay, I'm up for that, because... Okay. You know, give me something that's impossible to do. As an aside, I like to climb mountains, and I do that because they're just really, it's a hard thing to do, and I get really angry with myself when I'm halfway up the mountain. I say, why am I doing this? And it always works out well in the end, because of I usually make it to the top, and I usually get down, and I enjoy the experience. And it's the same thing with this play. It was a gargantuan task to do this in 3.5 weeks.
Yeah, no, it
would have to be, yeah.
I had real quickly, my example on that was Ghosts at the Edgemar Center. From the point I got, I played Pastor Manders in Ibsen's Ghost at the Edgemar Center in Santa Monica, which he's like Captain Exposition. Like, he gives all the backstory. From the point I got the script, from the point we opened, was 16 days.
Wow.
And it was just like, but it is, it's just like, when you get it done, there's nothing like it, because you have no downtime to do anything else.
Right.
So just focus it.
Well, I had to ask Lisa, my wife, I had to get her permission, because she was in New York doing a show. She was gone the entire time I was in rehearsal. So I was with the kids, getting them up every morning.
You have
getting
two children, right?
I got two kids, and I'm getting them to school and cooking breakfast and dinner and making sure everything's cool with them, and doing this at the same time. So that made it even more interesting on a daily basis. She's back now. Everything's cool, and it's open, so I'm fine.
You mentioned mountain climbing, but there's a number of things that you do that I think that people might not be aware of who only follow your theatrical life. You wrote a book recently. You have a book out currently?
I have a book out called Full Frontal Nudity.
Oh, yes.
It's been out for a while. Scribner published it, and... it's reviewed really well. I'm not sure that there are many copies left, but there might be some around. You can certainly get it digitally.
Full Frontal Nudity.
Full Frontal Nudity. That's right.
Which, you know, there, buy there, there, title
there,
alone, right?
There are a few levels upon which the title works. You know, and when I was first,
depending on your mood, is
I first level? Told Scribner that's the title that I wanted for the thing, and they called back and said, yeah, that's a really interesting title, but you really ought to think about, you know, using that title. And I thought, no, I'm going with Full Frontal Nudity, and if you read the book, you'll know why. But But then I realized once the book came out and people started to try to find it online, when they typed in full frontal nudity, they didn't exactly get my book. Which was a bit of a problem. And that's what they were talking about at the publishers when they said, maybe you should just call it full frontal or whatever. But nevertheless, it came out. It did extremely well and was really well reviewed, and I'm really proud of it. It's a kind of prequel to another book that I'm in the process of getting together right now.
How long did it take you to write that book?
2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
Did you have a co-writer with you or a
ghostwriter? No. I just sat down and I sat down at my computer one day and there was a blank page on Microsoft Word. My daughter walked into the office and said, "What are you doing, Dad?" And I said, "Well, I think I'm going to write a book." And I just started.
I was
going
to say, you do
moment.
Do things fast. If you wrote a book in 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. And it's all paying off. So,
Is it autobiographical
career.
Or just a...
I call it kind of a romp. It's autobiographical. It's the weird things that happened in my life up to age 25. Nothing about the film business. There's no mention of anything.
Oh, really?
It's all just hijinks that I had in high school and college. And it ends, actually, the first, very first play I did where I got my equity card was a show called Equus, which debuted in 1976 and won all the Tonys. And we did the West Coast premiere of it in San Francisco. And the play requires that the lead actor, the young boy, which I played, be naked on stage for... about 20 minutes at the end of the play, but full frontal nudity. I mean, totally naked. And so the play actually, the book ends as I'm taking my pants down on opening night for the first time.
Gotcha. This is the one that Daniel Radcliffe reprised on Broadway a few years ago.
He did it, I think, 2 years ago.
Peter Schaffer play.
Mm-hmm. Peter Schaffer, excellent play. Yeah. And that was my very first professional gig.
And was that with, you mentioned San Francisco, was that with Acton, the American Conservatory Theater there?
I was a company member. I went there and got the fine arts degree and then joined the company as well.
So let's jump to the show that you're doing, because you do play the different characters, the different relationships of the brother and sister. Whose concept was it for your character in each of those? Was that from the play? Was it indicated in the play, or was it something that you came up with, or that you came up with Josh, or...
Well, the characters are well delineated, well written. And, Josh wrote that there are three male brothers and three sisters. And, in the second act, one of the brother is he calls himself a Jewish intellectual, so I adopted a whole different persona for that character, which is probably why he thought that I wasn't the same guy in the room, because it is not. I mean, it's a character. It's a completely.
Yeah, it's a big departure. Yeah.
But I think that it's so well written and so each character is so well defined that it was not my job really to figure that out. It was the playwright's job. Mm-hmm. I'm putty in his hands essentially. I'm as an actor I bring what I can to it. But if the writing's not there, there's not going to be anything there.
Well, and he's also directing it. So as a director, and you work often, Paul, as a director and as you are now, a director of A Christmas Twist, which is a wonderful play that Paul's company
is doing.
They made a
spoof of A Christmas Carol we're doing right now. Very, very
Christmas
well
Carol
received.
And Oliver Twist kind of mashed together.
Oh, that sounds cool. Awesome. I'd like to see that. It's very funny. Is it funny?
I did the original production 20 years ago in Chicago. The first one, I was Tiny Twist in that because little tiny Tim never dies, so he just keeps growing, and they don't invest in a new crutch for him because they never know how long it's. Yeah. But no, it's a hybrid of the two. But no, we've been kicking ass at the Victory Theater over in Burbank. We got just love letter reviews and couldn't be having more fun. But what's great about it is that I'll keep it brief, but it's not a parody of A Christmas Carol. It's a parody of Dickens. It's a new tale because both tales are mashed together. So
is it good for kids?
We've had kids as young as 6 and 7 and there's just enough silly slapstick in it that the real wordplay goes over their heads, but the shticky stuff is great. I mean, when the Ghost of Christmas Future, who's an 8-foot-tall Grim Reaper, comes in on a skateboard because it's got it with, it's like a low rent, grand entrance, but then he steps off it, you see, it's just a skateboard that pulled him out there. They scream at that. They dig it. So it's going well. But we're not here to talk about.
No. I was just saying.
But thank you though, Michael.
Yeah,
thank you for bringing it up.
You as a director, you shape the performances of characters that are written in the play.
Well,
you've written the play yourself, like Josh did, but he also had that assignment, Josh, in shaping your character is something that.
And it's easier with what Harry's describing. It's easier working with actors who are so noticeably aware of the text and so grateful for the content.
Right.
You made a number of comments so far today of just really how much you respect the written word and how important that is to you. And that's like 75% of it is that the actors love the material. It's just a matter of loving the material together.
Right.
You know?
And what I think is particularly interesting, Harry, about your work is that most people, I think, you know, you're one of those celebrities in our business who are famous for various reasons, television perhaps bringing you into people's homes. And you're a very, you know, handsome man on top of it. Now, obviously, People Magazine knew what they were doing. And so I think when you're sitting there in the audience, at least that's kind of where I was looking around and getting a sense of what people were anticipating was going to happen, it's really to see the two of you, you and Loretta, you know, walk out on that stage. And that in itself is something. And then it's kind of like, okay, so now what are you going to do? Because they've seen you in a different medium, generally speaking, on television. And really, that was the best part of the evening for me, was seeing the wonderful skills that they have, both of them, as actors, and how they also relate to one another in each of these three different sections of the show, in these different characters. And from, I mean, you have a wealth of obvious credentials from your studies in acting, and your work certainly speaks for itself. And Loretta, I would assume, is somewhat similar, because she's an amazing actress, and she's just as interesting on stage as she was on television, and so are you, perhaps more so.
Well, the interesting thing about television is that it's a great equalizer when it comes to people with talent. I mean, Loretta is a great actress, and she, before she did MASH, she was doing all kinds of interesting, different kinds of things on the stage, and she's continued to do that since she did MASH. But you do a TV series as iconic as that, or L.A. Law in my case, and people get a certain fixed idea of what you do, and that's what they expect, and they want to see that. And in Loretta's case, you know, I think that people will see that, you know, she's much, much more than Hot Lips Houlihan on MASH. And it's kind of unfortunate for the actors who have such great success like that for such a long time on television that their career almost gets beiged out somewhat by that. But
Cortez, you were going to say something.
I just read the autobiography of Vivian Vance.
And
it speaks exactly to that point about how, you know, she had this insane resume before I Love Lucy of all this very fancy theater, Old Globe, and all this kind of stuff, and how frustrating it was for her in her later life to be defined by that one part, which was really just a fraction of what her talent was about.
Right.
And I think what you say is absolutely true. You know, you get marginalized, and people think that just because you do that, that's all you can do.
Exactly. Well, I like the fractional idea is really good, because in my case, L.A. Law was a tiny period in my life, and yet it's what has been the most definitive moment in my life. And I look back and I go, yeah, I did that for a couple of years. That was kind of cool, but I've got this other thing that I do. But it's kind of hard to break through that. But fortunately, I get to be naked again on Shameless, so which I'm doing now this season for the second season, the second time I'm doing it for so the sequel to my Full Frontal Nudity book will probably have a lot to do with Shameless.
Shameless is the Bill Macy Showtime.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Which
that's a killer review.
Comes
then
out in January.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so odd that I bookend my career with these full frontal nudity.
Yes, Full Frontal Nudity, the sequel.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, the thing is,
from 18 to 50.
Thing is, he works all the time, and seeing him.
Of course,
on
he
the
works
stage,
all the time. He's always taking his pants off.
Well,
he's not going to work.
No, I mean, seeing him on the stage, it comes full circle as to why he works.
I just love when I see people that are known primarily from television on stage and they hit it out of the park, because it's the hardest thing.
Yeah.
They're doing the hardest thing, which is live theater, and especially, I mean, live theater is difficult. More the most difficult, but then you bring it down to a two-hander where it's just one tennis match between two people, and that raises the stakes even more. Speaking of that,
yes.
I want to throw the information out there again. It's
yes.
1 November Yankee,
that.
And that is at NoHo Arts Center, 11136 Magnolia at Lancashire in North Hollywood. Performance is Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3. And for tickets, call 818-508-7101 or visit NoHoArtsCenter.com. But we're not done by a long shot. Just wanted to get that out there.
We have
time.
An arts calendar, Paul. You're going to tell us a little something.
We have an arts calendar.
It's in Pasadena.
I'm going to get to that. Yes. On stage now through December 23rd at South Pasadena's Fremont Center Theater is The Snow Queen, a world premiere musical written by Dale Sandlin and Steve Apostolina.
Apostolina.
I believe. I'm Italian.
That's a cool name.
I know. I'm Italian. That should come more trippingly off my tongue here. Performed in the style of English panto, which I love. Not enough people are doing panto these days. The Snow Queen follows the misadventures of Widow Twanky and her charges Kai and Gerda as they battle the evil Snow Queen and the rather bumbling forces of darkness, loosely based on the fairy tale of the same name by Hans Christian Andersen. It is a tale of old love, new love, lost love, found love, devils, reindeer, magic mirrors, and snowballs. It is a hilarious evening of holiday fun and live music for ages 6 to 96. Performances run Friday through Sundays, and tickets are available by calling 866-811-4111 or online at OvationTix.com.
It's a, that sounds fantastic.
I read the script, actually, because Dale Sandlin's son, Matt Sandlin, is in our theater company.
Of course.
And we were looking at this as it was either this or a Christmas Twist that we were going to do this year.
Oh, really?
And we opted to go with Christmas Twist because I was able to direct it.
Yeah.
I wanted to direct one more time before I went off to do other things. So we went with that. But we were going to do this one next year, but it's nice to see that they're doing so well with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Space. So
we should bring up our next guest.
Please
now.
Do. Please do. You want to get
certainly,
introduce
him? Absolutely. He's certainly no stranger to television, theater, and the concert stage. He has performed in the PBS special Great Performances, Sondheim, A Celebration at Carnegie Hall, Comic Relief 7, goodness, The Rosie O'Donnell Show, The Today Show, Good Morning America, and in over 100 commercials and voiceovers. And he was, now this is very unusual, he was also the voice of NyQuil for 3 years.
See, he was the voice of NyQuil, but I was going to be the stunt nose for that, and I lost
it. Now you're sitting here together,
yeah,
the
I
two
lost
of you.
It. You
right.
Never. Well, you what? Just is that incorrect? Is
no, it's just embarrassing. For some reason, I got embarrassed. I don't know why.
Well, you shouldn't be because NyQuil has helped.
Well, that's odd.
Because you're, and it probably is your voice was the catalyst.
So
for
why
that.
The NyQuil T-shirt?
yes. I'm naked with Harry Hamlin.
It's just another
one of those
Thursdays.
Right.
Thank you.
He's not only toured the world with the incomparable Liza Minnelli. But he has, oh my goodness, where is the rest of my script here, Paul?
But he's appeared on Broadway in Miss Minnelli's critically acclaimed show, Liza's at the Palace.
There you go.
This month, on Monday, December 10th, he's returning to Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal in his all-new stage show, Have a Swell Holiday. Is that what it is?
Have a Swell Holiday.
Featuring the swell girls, Melissa Bailey and Julie Garn. Is that correct?
Garnier.
Ooh, you can tell I went to public school. Please welcome the charismatic and multi-talented Cortez Alexander. Yeah. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Glad
to be
good.
Back.
Yeah. We are happy to have you here.
So you're doing the Federal, huh?
That's
now,
right.
Now, you did Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's back when Michael was there,
no.
Right?
No.
He's only done the club at, since we've been at the Federal.
Oh,
he was
oh.
there in August.
Oh, okay.
He was
I
on
thought,
the show promoting
I thought it was.
The,
no, I remember he was on the show, but I thought that was farther back, that yeah. he, that you were still at Vitello's at the time.
Nope.
Should I not say the V word?
Oh, no. Absolutely. No, so it was a lovely place. 6 years we were there.
Yeah,
we
no.
400
was,
shows there. It was fantastic.
400?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was like, what, third?
You were early on.
I was early
you were
on.
You were in the first month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do my autobiographical show. It's called Full Frontal, and I actually play Harry Hamlin.
I thought you were going to say
and
the Snow Queen.
Yeah.
And, anything's
we're,
possible.
Did, you know, it's unauthorized.
Do you
so,
have a prosthetic?
I do it all with lighting. I do it all with lighting.
Big lights.
Yeah, big lights. Clean.
Shadow puppets.
Yeah, that's how it works.
So, no, we are excited to have Cortez back because he was brought in the Swell Show in August, and now he's bringing in Have a Swell Holiday, which is the name of his show, which is something for everyone at this holiday season on Monday, December 10th.
That's right.
And this is my question for you, and I ask this of all people who do cabaret shows or shows of that ilk. What is first? Do you pick the songs and then put a narrative to it? Do you know the tale you want to tell and you just sort of find thematically linked things? Do you even put that much thought into it?
So sometimes yes to all of those things.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll say, I've always wanted to sing this song. How can I make it fit into the thing? And then once it's in, then I think, okay, now what kind of pitter-patter can make it look like I actually plan to put this in there?
Okay.
You know, other times I think I've got a really great story to tell. What song in the world can punctuate that story?
Okay.
So it works in all kinds of different
and
ways.
And see, I would imagine it's easier with a holiday-themed show because a little bit of your theme is laid out for you.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
very much like a puzzle, I think, is what you're what you're saying.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm open to ideas, so.
Well, we have a track from his newest CD.
We do.
Swell CD, which demonstrates, actually, Cortez, when I listened to this track, I had no idea that you sang in this genre, which I'm assuming this is intentional, but it's country. It's a fantastic song. Did you write the song?
I did.
Yes, on top of it. So, can we hear a little bit
called,
of that?
This the track is called Pilot Bird?
That's
that
right.
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right, so let's give it a listen.
Yep.
That's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I noticed that Harry had the same question that I had while we were listening quietly. You're playing on it as well.
Yeah. I played all the keyboards on there and sang all the backups and wrote most of the songs.
No, it's really, it's a very, 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 very pretty.
And it's very different from the way that I've heard him sing to date. I have not heard this kind of style.
And you know, you mentioned it was country, but it has a country flavor to it,
yeah,
but
I wouldn't call
it a country song.
No, but I think it could be a huge country hit, actually. Oh, if you
thank you.
Don't
oh.
you? I mean, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But of course.
You know why I think that? Because country has finally arrived at a place today that it's no longer so countryfied, you know?
Well, yeah, and you
it's
see a
cool
lot of things on the same charts.
Yeah, it's cool, and the artists are interesting and different. There's a new television series called Nashville,
right,
which is exactly about this. It's about the recording industry and the players of it, but, you know, in a very formal story line. Very interesting, but and the music that they're putting on that show, not so dissimilar from Smash and what they're putting on that show, and or Glee, what they're putting on that show, except Glee does a lot of covers, but
yeah.
Now country music is cool. This is a great country
song. I think a lot of the times people get they limit their perception based on the label of what something is quote unquote called.
And I
think in my show, one of the things I try and do is really just not define everything and just let it be what it is. And if you respond to it, great. And if you don't, you don't. If I'm hesitant to say that things are cabaret or things are country or anything like that, because people already start to
preconceived.
The ticker tape goes off in their head. They're thinking, I don't know.
Yeah, because as Harry mentioned earlier, it's easier for people. People are comfortable if they're able to label things.
Right.
So, oh, it's Harry Hamlin. This is the L.A. Law guy. Stamp, label, go from there.
Right.
But people are just much broader and more. There's much more color in the world than that. On the CD that this is on, are there different, like, do you have, like, representational songs of different styles?
Different oeuvres, yes.
different genres.
You had to get that word.
Different genres.
Yes, different genres.
Genres.
There are. There's something on there that I, you know, the actress Helen Slater.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very good friend of mine, and she wrote a song called Any Day Now, and that's very big band. We've got horns and strings on there.
Oh wow.
Then there's stuff that sounds a little more rock and roll. When I say rock and roll, like more sort of alternative sounding. So there's literally something for everyone. The opening song, Every Other Thought, is very Brazilian.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, here's the thing. My favorite thing could end up being my downfall in that I have a little bit of ADD and lack of focus, but it's not because of that. When I decided I wanted to do an album, my first thought was, what kind of music should it be? And then I thought, put that away and just do what you like to do. And it just turned out over time that what I liked were all of these different kinds of styles, and I responded organically to all of them. Yeah. I love Yvonne Linz, and I love Dori Caymmi, and I also love Tony Bennett, and you know, Harry Connick, and that kind of thing.
Right.
So why not, if you can do it organically, pay homage to the things you love?
And that's right. Just it. It's organic, and you're also thinking in terms of just like you are singing the things that you love. There's people who don't want to listen to one style, you know.
It's like, to me, it's exactly like an actor having to only be limited to one role. An actor can play a bunch of different kinds of parts. So why then can't a musician be able to play different kinds of music?
Whoa. What is the name of the album again?
Swell.
Swell. Okay. Yeah. And that's on all the things, CD Baby and Amazon
all
and all
things.
That stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. Just... I don't want to lose you in the jargon.
It's on all the things. That's basically my limit of my jargon, too. It's on all the things.
On all the things, right. Yes. On CD Baby and Amazon.com and iTunes and all that.
Yeah.
That's what I meant by all the things.
It's a great album.
I want to also let people know, because we've talked about the appearance, but we haven't given the details. This is Cortez Alexander, who will be at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. This is Monday, December 10th. And, of course, that's at 5303 Lancashire Boulevard in beautiful North Hollywood, a stone's throw, actually, from where Mr. Hamlin is playing.
That's right.
Reservations 818-754, literally a stone's throw, because I've actually thrown rocks. No. 818-754-8700 for reservations at the Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
Yeah.
Gorgeous room, great place, good food.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All of the above. But... you do so many other things. Tell it, Life with Liza. We have to hit upon that a little bit. That, I mean, she kind of discovered you, did she not? You were in your group, the Tonics?
Yeah. I guess basically what happened was I was in New York playing in this little club with my old group, the Tonics, where we made a big splash in a very tiny little, you know, pond. And we were playing in this little club with like 40, 50 people, and we had an extended run there. And the Post and the Daily News, New York Times did a feature on us, and she came down to see what the deal was, and she found out that I did the vocal arrangements for the group, and she basically just said, I think you're terrific, come on the road with me. And at that point, we were a couple of years into the group, and you know, we were just struggling to just pay the piano player, who was Jason Robert Brown, was our pianist at the time. So
not too shabby.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Not too shabby. We actually were his first job out of his music school. So
she seems to find people such as yourself, Michael Feinstein. She also introduced him socially here in Los Angeles, at least.
Yeah.
Wasn't she huge with the Pet Shop Boys, too?
Yeah, she had that. She did a cover of Losing My Mind with them.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I remember that. Yeah. Fantastic.
But she's become a great friend and a wonderful mentor. And she's, you know, she's great.
And she supports you. She's attended a number of your shows. You were mentioning that.
She's never come to. She's never seen me do my own thing before. She's seen she's seen me with other people. Like when she first hired me, she wanted me to put together a vocal trio for her show.
Right.
So we did that. So she's only seen me in a group situation, but she's never seen me by myself.
Well, hopefully she'll have that opportunity.
Right? Hopefully she will, and that would be Monday, December 10th at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal on Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood. Do you like the way? Yeah, I'm just.
Are you
I'm,
just a
My segues
in
are seamless, aren't they?
That's very smooth.
Yeah, you know, because and if you happen to stumble down the street,
yes,
you could attend One November Yankee, which is performing at the NoHo Arts Center nearby.
That's right.
Tickets for that, NoHoArtsCenter.com.
That's right.
Smooth, like cashmere
like
vocal
butter.
Cords, man.
Like butter.
Do you want to ask them the question that we always ask
in
the last 5 minutes that we have?
Yes. We kind of baptize our guests, and you've been baptized once, but you're going to have to be baptized again. And what that means, oh my gosh, they were scared. The looks on their faces, Paul. We ask you to reach back into your memory and recall perhaps embarrassing or funny moments that have happened to you on stage,
yeah,
while working in a film, perhaps on television, whatever they may be.
Those embarrassing mishaps that make this
hilarious, funny, something that you'll never forget. That you know, is a kind of a treasure in your vault of work.
On stage problems, yeah. Something going wrong, something
anything
going
and everything. You can go anywhere with this.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But mine just recently happened. I just did that play at the Crown City Theater called Dangerous Corner,
mm-hmm.
and in it I played a ghost. And the whole play, it was a revival of a 1932 murder mystery all about who killed me. In the original play, my character is not even on stage at all. But in this production, the director had the concept of having me lurk on stage and sort of comment and on the action. And I'm completely... came in at the wrong time. It was in the story of One More Week. I just walked out on stage way, like pages before I was supposed to, and thought, I'm in the wrong place, and yet I'm on stage, but I'm a ghost, so I can do whatever I want. So I just wandered around, sat down, and just made myself at home, and then just ambled off completely while all of this other dialogue was going on.
How did the other actors react to that, or did they?
They absolutely tried to keep on going, yeah. But you know, it was literally like being caught with your pants down.
It's shit like that. I'm sorry, Michael. It's stuff like that. Uh-huh. It's stuff like that that always gets called out in reviews. And, mm-hmm. you know, the symbolism of bringing him in earlier into the scene, uh-huh. and just being a presence while they spoke at the other...
I thought I heard my cue. It was in the One More Week, and you're not really sure of what's going on and all the changes that they make that day.
Yeah.
And I just walked out as bold as brass, as if I belonged, and then it was too late to turn
hysterical.
Back. So I thought, I'm just going to stay here for a couple of minutes and really pay attention and see how I can get out gracefully.
Well, and you got to make it big. Uh-huh. I mean, if you walk out, you got to make...
I poured a drink. I sat down. And, you know.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Now, here's my question. Did anybody in the audience have any clue that anything had gone wrong?
No, thankfully. There was a piano on stage, and in the thing, I played a couple of songs. So I went to the piano and sat down and watched the action a little bit and, you know, skulked off, sweating all of a sudden.
The flop sweat. Harry, do you have a tale?
May very well have improved the show.
You know? You never know.
Since we closed, you might be right.
I can go back to the show that I did. My first professional experience was Equus, and in that show, the way that was production design was done, there were seats on the stage, bleachers on the stage for kids. If you were a student, you could buy a quarter price ticket or whatever and still stand in line on the night, and you could actually sat on the stage with us as we acted the play. So there were always 30 or 40 kids sitting in these bleachers right in front of us, within 4 or 5 feet of us as we did the play, which was great. I mean, and I never saw the play, but I imagine if I had been one of those kids, it would have been great to see. But in my case, I was actually standing on the stage, and I was taking my pants off in front of these kids who were right, and they're all my age, and they're all, and I can looking right, they're 4 feet away, they're pretty girls, they're guys, or whatever, and I can see them, I can see what they're doing while I'm taking my pants off, and all of the eyes which were glued to my face during the previous scene began to just float down as I took my pants down, and I could see every single eye in the theater focused on one spot, you know, like a laser on one spot, and that little spot was going, I'm smaller and smaller all the time.
It's cold in that theater.
And it was, at the end of the show, I'd always say, it was so cold out there tonight, you know. But yeah, that was pretty.
Was like
that was
voice.
A pretty major moment.
Oh, damn!
I would imagine it would be.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hysterical. Yeah. No, it's just people don't. You know, you always. Whenever you're talking to, whenever I'm talking to someone, I know my fly is open by how intensely they're staring in my face.
Well, in your case, absolutely.
If they stare, if when someone's staring at you with this white hot intensity, you're just like, okay, what's wrong with me that they're trying not to look at? You know.
People don't realize that actors are. Absolutely very hip to what the audience is doing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they don't realize that we can see you.
Right, yeah. I'm four...
we know what you're looking
We can see you and we can hear you.
You're 4 feet away from it.
Right. Yeah. As long as it's not one of my pet peeves, which is when you are on the stage and looking into the audience and seeing people texting...
And the glow.
And the glow coming from their screen. Absolutely unbelievable to me.
Gentlemen, a distinct pleasure having both of you on. We hope you have enjoyed your hour with us, as we have.
Maybe remind our audience one more time how to see Harry Hamlin and Loretta Swit in their wonderful show that is playing at the NoHo Arts Center in North Hollywood. It is One November Yankee. It is on stage through January 5th at the NoHo Arts Center. Tickets are easy. They are affordable. And call 818-508-7101 or visit NoHoArtCenter.com for your tickets. And do it now because the show is selling very well and getting very wonderful reviews in Los Angeles.
But they are not performing on Monday nights. So
they're
on Monday nights, you have the ability to see Cortez Alexander Stirling's Upstairs
at
the Federal. That's a one-nighter only, folks.
Yes.
So be advised on that. 5303 Lancashire. Reservations 818-754-8700.
Indeed. That's gentlemen, fun. Thank you so much. Maybe you can play us off. Play
we'll
us
have
out.
Cortez play us off the air. Shall we
sing
do
us
that?
Out.
All right. Let's do
thank
it.
You, Paul.
Just follow the pilot bird, and he'll lead you to the sun.
Listening to State of the Arts with Michael Stirling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.